Good afternoon, everyone. As you know, we have one case on the calendar this afternoon, Argueta and Arriba v. Garland, which had originally been scheduled for argument on December 7th, and we granted an adjournment to today and converted it to a Zoom argument. Judge Sack and I are delighted to be joined by Chief Judge Underhill from the District of Connecticut. We want to thank him for sitting with us by designation, notwithstanding as many duties as on the district court. I've been advised that the attorneys are all present for the argument, so we will proceed with the appellant. Mr. Rayfield.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mike Rayfield on behalf of the petitioner Angel Argueta.
Yes, good afternoon. I see you have 6 minutes and Ms. Matthews is getting two, and then you're gonna have two for rebuttal. Is that how you've divided it up?
That's our plan. I'm going to address the CAT issue and the particularly serious crime issue, and my colleague is going to address the U visa. Right. So starting with the CAT issue, this is not an ordinary CAT claim because unlike many CAT petitioners, Mr. Argueta has proven both that he was violently assaulted in the past and that his assailants and others are actively threatening him with death in Honduras. In 2007, Mr. Argueta was assaulted and threatened with death four times by people connected to both MS-13 and the notoriously violent Lagos family. Then, in 2014, just before his release from prison, his family members in both countries all started getting the same message in a number of terrifying scenarios. Mr. Argueta's mother was brutally beaten in her home by men demanding to know when Mr. Argueta would return, and the only reason they spared her life was so that they could use her to find out when Mr. Argueta did return. Both a family friend in Honduras and Mr. Argueta's sisters got the same message from Fidel Lagos and members of the Lagos family that Mr. Argueta would be killed when he returned.
I gather you had a reasonably powerful expert witness on this, and the IJ didn't even mention that testimony in at least in writing in deciding the case. Is that correct?
That's correct. Neither the IJ nor the BIA mentioned this expert report even once. And under our position is that under this court's decision in Manning, that's a reversible error on its own, where the court found that there was error in the BIA's failure to consider the unrebutted expert report, which concluded that Manning's life was still at risk if he were to be removed to Jamaica. Mr. Argueta's expert report was important for the exact same reason. It explains why, despite the passage of time, Mr. Argueta remains in grave danger because in the words of the report, quote, it is very difficult and nearly impossible for a member of a family who is part of a family feud to extract themselves from the feud, even after years or generations. And the agency ignored all of this and essentially used that tactic to entirely siphon off Mr. Argueta's experience in the U.S. with the more recent threats and violence centered around Honduras. And the connection, we would say, is obvious. Everyone making death threats against Mr. Argueta was referring to him directly by name. One of them, in the case of his sister Rosa, was Reynari Lagos himself. And one of them, in the case of his mother, said that he was sparing Maria's life precisely because Angel has to come home and that's who we want.
And so, you had the neighbor's affidavit as well, who said there was a specific reference that he'd be killed when he returned. This was from Lagos's father, I guess, correct?
That's correct. Fidel Lagos, according to Dilcia Rivera, a family friend, told her that when, quote, Angel arrived in Honduras, he would be killed. That's AR-1119.
And so that's a direct relationship to the people who your client had the dispute with in the United States, right?
That's correct. And all of this evidence was undisputed and unrebutted. The IJ found that Mr. Argueta's testimony was credible, and we would say the government offered him practically nothing, no testimony, no expert report, and not any significant cross-examination.
So if your argument is persuasive, what we have to do is send it back for them to consider that. Is that right?
So we would ask that you not just remand for consideration of the expert report, but actually hold that the record compels the conclusion that Mr. Argueta suffers a likelihood of severe pain and suffering if he returns to Honduras under prong one of CAT, and remand solely for determination of the second prong, which is acquiescence. That would be what we would ask you to do. The agency hasn't had a chance to weigh in on acquiescence yet.
Describe the acquiescence branch. Say what you mean by acquiescence.
Oh, I'm sorry. The second prong of CAT is that we have proved that a public official would acquiesce in the torture that Mr.
Why shouldn't we given that there was no consideration or no explanation given for the expert's report or affidavit, why should we at least give the agency an opportunity to perhaps explain why a little weight was given to that report? Wouldn't that be the more prudent thing to do?
I think you could do that, but I think that the IJ and the BIA have had every opportunity to consider the expert report. Mr. Argueta has been in detention for 8 years, and I think at this point, the court has all the information it needs to decide whether the record compels the conclusion that he's going to be likely tortured, and we would ask the only remaining question the agency is permitted should be permitted to consider is acquiescence. Unless the court has any other questions on CAT, I will address the particularly serious crime issue in maybe a minute or so, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I just want to, the state of play right now in the circuit courts is that the Eighth and Ninth Circuits have held that it is not a reasonable, that the BIA's decision in GGS is not a reasonable reading of the immigration statutes or even the BIA's own precedents. And I just want to address the Tenth Circuit has concluded otherwise, and we think this court should side with the Eighth and Ninth. And I should say the BIA gave two reasons for its interpretation in GGS, neither of which actually holds up. One is that the BIA said that a person's mental illness is best evaluated in his criminal case, and that doing so here would be a reassessment of the person's criminal culpability. But the false premise in that is that there's no reason to believe that that a person's mental health actually was considered in a criminal case, particularly in a case like Mr. Argueta's. We know that he argued self-defense, but we don't know if this PTSD played any role in the criminal case.
But that was PTSD was found long after the crime. Isn't that true? I mean, wasn't it years later that it was analyzed?
Right. He was diagnosed with PTSD as part of his immigration proceedings by a psychologist.
And that was sometime afterwards.
It was. Yeah, it was in 2015, shortly before his release from prison. And so the BIA's second rationale was that mental health is simply irrelevant to the key factor in a particularly serious crime analysis, which is whether somebody poses a danger to the community. And we just think that that's an unreasonable interpretation. We're not suggesting that mental health evidence is always supports a petitioner, and certainly not that it's always dispositive. But even GGS acknowledged the impact mental illness can have on an individual's behavior. And this case is a perfect example. Mr. Argueta's PTSD arose in part from violence perpetrated by the very people involved in his alleged particularly serious crime. His psychological report says that when he's re-exposed to that same traumatic stimuli, he has flashbacks, panic attacks, and other episodes that overwhelm his sense.
How do we know that happened at the time of the attack here and the crime for which he was convicted?
Well, we can't know for sure, but we know that from the psychological evaluation that he suffered from PTSD at the time of the crime.
At the time of the crime?
Yes. That's what the psychological evaluation says. And so that can be taken into consideration. I mean, and we would say that this evidence is critical to whether Mr. Argueta poses a future danger to people other than his former attackers. That is, like, to people who would not necessarily trigger his PTSD.
Mr. Rayfield, there's two procedural issues I just want you to get your opinion on. One is the AG, as you know, is reconsidering this precedent. The government wanted to adjourn and stay this proceeding, which we denied. But the fact of the matter is they are potentially reconsidering this legal issue. And then the other one is that my understanding is another panel has this legal issue before it. It's already been argued several months ago. So my question to you, I guess, is if we were to agree with you on the CAT issue and we're going to remand on the CAT issue, would there be any need for us to wait for the other panel or somehow try to decide this issue, given that you're going to be going back? And if the AG does revisit that precedent and overrule that precedent, won't you then have an opportunity to again raise this below, or am I missing something?
I don't think you're missing anything as to the AG. So our position is that, especially given the length of his detention, there shouldn't be any delay in resolving this case. That's our broad position. But as to the AG, the reason there's a good reason to decide it now is that regardless of which way the AG comes out, this court is still going to need to construe the statute. If the AG overrules GTS, it will no longer have to give that decision Chevron deference under any precedent. But the court is still going to have to decide whether mental health is part of the particularly serious crime analysis.
Well, and not unless the government, if the government decides they're going to let it be part of it, who's going to be contesting that? In other words, if the government decides it should be part of the analysis, who's going to bring it to us?
Well, it would be before you in this case now. So I'm not sure what the...
I'm saying, I guess, if we remand the case and it goes the other way, it'll allow you, I think, your client the opportunity then to raise it below, raise this mental health issue below. Or am I missing something? Your client's not going to be precluded then from raising it if they change the precedent, right?
Forgive me if I'm misunderstanding. I'm just wondering I'm trying to just sort out what the action of this court would be in that.
We remand on the CAT. We say we don't need to decide the mental health issue on the particularly serious crime at this juncture because it's under reconsideration by the AG and we're remanding anyway. And this presumably that will then get, this potentially it could be mooted out below. In other words, if the AG reverses the precedent, allows mental health, then your client will get an opportunity to more fully raise it, I guess, below. And we wouldn't have to decide it.
Fair enough. I think that makes sense. I guess the action would be you would grant the petition as to the particularly serious crime issue, but just to remand in light of the AG's decision. Would that be? Is that
couldn't the IJ find a particularly serious crime, irrespective of what decided by the AG on that issue? I mean, as a matter of fact, no matter it's. It's still a particularly serious crime, given that he buried a knife into the guy's head and got 8 years in prison for that. That sounds like a pretty serious crime.
The IJ could certainly conclude that, could make that factual finding. But the legal error that we are raising on appeal is that the IJ found that it was unable, based on BIA precedents, to consider
it didn't do that. It said in an alternative ruling, even if I could consider this, I would find that, as Judge Sack pointed out, it's particularly serious. I thought your point on that one was that the BIA did not adopt that portion of the decision. I thought that was your legal argument on that issue.
That's correct. And I misspoke. That's our position, that the IJ did decide it in the alternative, but the BIA only adopted the part of the decision and therefore we cannot
deny the petition on that basis. Because the BIA did not rule on it.
Yes, that's right. And just to get back to Judge Bianco's question, I think that my client would have no issue with remanding based on the CAT issue and remanding solely, on the particularly serious crime issue, in light of whatever the AG decides, if that's what you're contemplating. And I see I'm way over my time. I apologize.
It's okay. We only have one argument, so we're okay.
Yeah. And that clock is often very fast, so I wouldn't worry about it.
I really appreciate that. And I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Matthews, to address the visa issue.
Go ahead, Ms. Matthews. We won't credit his time against you. Don't worry.
Thank you. Anne Matthews for the petitioner. Here, the IJ This court should also remand because the immigration judge erred in refusing to adjudicate a waiver of inadmissibility that would have allowed Mr. Argueta to apply for a U visa. Specifically, the immigration judge refused to adjudicate a waiver found at 8 U.S.C. 1182 D3A2. This court should join the 7th, 11th, and 4th circuits in finding that the statute gives the authority to adjudicate such waivers. The plain language of that section allows for inadmissibility waivers, quote, in the discretion of the Attorney General. Throughout the INA and regulations, immigration judges are empowered to act as delegates of the Attorney General, specifically at 8 U.S.C. 1101B4, and then in the regulations at 8 CFR 1003-10A, that provision gives immigration judges broad authority to act as delegates, and subsection B gives them broad discretion to exercise their independent judgment in cases that come before them. Further, the regulations at 8 CFR 1240.1A provide that they may take actions consistent with the law in order to adjudicate their cases. Because the statute is clear, there is no need for deference to the agency, and this is precisely what the 7th and 11th circuits found. Even if the court were to find that the statute is ambiguous, there is similarly no deference owed to the agency concerning the regulations, because as I just went through, the regulations that empowering immigration judges to act as the attorney general's delegates are clear, and therefore no error deference is afforded. And this is precisely what the Fourth Circuit held.
Ms. Matthews, let me ask you another simple practical question I asked to Mr. Rayfield on his issue. My understanding is that since this issue came up and they refused to consider it in light of USCIS having it under consideration, that USCIS has now denied the waiver and found him ineligible for the U visa. So I guess my question is, notwithstanding how interesting this issue is that you might be presenting to us, why do we need to, if we are going to remand the case, we decide to remand the case on the CAT claim and or the particularly serious claim, isn't this essentially moot because now the agency, there's been a denial and the agency will clearly decide this issue along with all the other issues that it would have to decide on the remand, or am I missing something?
There are two reasons why the court should consider this issue. First, Mr. Argueta's U visa application is actually pending on appeal. It was originally denied based off of the denial of the inadmissibility waiver. And it is currently the denial, we appeal the denial. Secondly, even if Mr. Argueta were issued an order of deportation, he could still pursue the U visa. That would not preclude, that is an order of deportation.
I understand that. I understand it's separate, but let me just go back to your first point. So there is a separate appeal that's going to go before another panel on this, on the U visa denial. Is that what you're telling me?
It's an administrative appeal on the
U visa. Administrative appeal. Okay.
Would you do me a favor for the simple judge, and just to make sure that I'm not on the wrong road here, what's a U visa? How would you describe a U visa in a sentence or two?
Yeah, so a U visa allows certain victims of certain crime to remain in the United States, such that they may assist law enforcement in investigating and prosecuting the crimes against them.
Good, right. Thanks.
I just want to go back. I'm even more confused on the procedural issue, because if it's an administrative appeal, you're asking us to tell the agency you didn't have to wait for USCIS to make a decision. You could have decided it, independently. But the posture of the case now is because USCIS has decided it is before right now before them. So why would we decide this issue? It seems completely moot at this point as it relates to your client.
Mr. Argueta did apply for a waiver of inadmissibility under section D 14 as well as D3 before USCIS. However, if the immigration judge independently waived his inadmissibility, the USCIS would therefore be able to adjudicate his U visa application.
So it's a different standard, you're saying, that the current appeal on the U visa is not going to encompass all the arguments you need to make with respect to that? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, as a threshold matter, Mr. Argueta would have to have a waiver of inadmissibility in order for USCIS to grant the U visa on the other prongs that he has been a victim of a certain type of crime, that he has been helpful to law enforcement, and so on. So the waiver of inadmissibility is a predicate to them being able to grant him a U visa. And for that reason, if an immigration judge is able to, as we believe that as the statute clearly empowers him to do, to adjudicate the waiver of inadmissibility and were to grant Mr. Argueta such a waiver, he could then go before USCIS in order to obtain the U visa.
But is that different from reviewing the denial of the waiver in terms of what the standard would be? Isn't it the same issue, or is it a different standard if they were not proceeding after there's been a denial of a waiver?
The USCIS may consider the waiver under Section D14, which is a separate provision, which allows U visa holders to get a waiver of inadmissibility for that section. And that is slightly different than the provisions under D3, which are for many types of non-immigrant visa applicants.
Okay. All right. I understand. All right. Thank you very much. And Mr. Rayfield has 2 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. And Ms. Marr for the government.
Good afternoon. It's Brooke Maurer for the respondent, the Attorney General. I guess I'll start with the U visa, if I may. The government is of the position that the matter is moot. And I'm actually just aware, I was unaware of the appeal that was currently pending, which basically strengthens the government's position that this court would not be in need to make this determination. I mean, the IJ declined and then to consider the waiver, and the USCIS denied the waiver as a matter of discretion. So these things are under review right now for the agency, and would argue that this is moot.
I thought what I was hearing from Ms. Matthews, if I was understanding it correctly, is that if the IJ believed they had some independent authority to do this, independent of reviewing the denial of the waiver, that I guess a different standard would potentially apply, or is that not correct?
I don't believe so. The remand, they requested remand back to the IJ to have them reconsider the U visa, and you know, the board basically looked at it as an abuse of discretion kind of issue. And the statute clearly states that USCIS had the purview for granting both under D3 and D14. And that was left to them. And that determination was made in September.
Okay.
Right. I guess I'll turn next to as you noted earlier, we had also noted that matter of BZR is a case that the Attorney General is asked to refer to himself. Briefing won't be completed until the 24th, which unfortunately is on Monday. And I have no timeline as to when they're going to render a decision on that matter and in what way it will go as far as its consideration. As counsel noted, you know, the IJ and the court noted, the IJ did make the determination of the particular serious crime analysis pursuant to NAM and noted that even if that mental health was a requirement to be considered, that even considering that upon the record and everything in total, it still not have changed the ultimate outcome of the PSC analysis. And the government holds.
The problem is the BIA certainly did not explicitly adopt that alternative ruling. I know that you made the argument in the briefs that somehow implicitly it was doing so, but I was finding that not particularly strong.
Yeah. So, and in that case, if you would find that the board didn't explicitly adopted, then it would have to go back for it to redetermine like the IJ's alternative determination based on that fact.
Well, and also in addition to considering the alternative, it also potentially would allow time again for the AG's decision.
Correct. In matter of, yeah, matter of BZR.
Okay.
That is correct. And then finally, the government still holds that the IJ did not err in holding that petitioner failed to make his meet his burden of proof for CAT, like especially with the fact that the string of suppositions that petitioner is making in order to form the chain of events that need to take place, the torture that he has claimed like took place in the United States. He's not demonstrated that any of the individuals that was that were in the United States are now in Honduras where he could be found. We don't have anything beyond the affidavits stating that he has an individualized risk of harm there.
Well, yeah. First of all, you have an expert affidavit that was not addressed at all, which is problematic at its core. Do you want to address that?
Well, as you know, as we had stated in our brief, we felt that the IJ incorporated everything in by looking at everything in the evidence and did not have to expressly indicate the consideration of that affidavit.
But that affidavit was a pretty important part of their proof. You had an expert talking about the conditions and made a specific opinion that Mr. Argueta was at very high risk of experiencing violence, torture, and even death if returned to Honduras, specifically referenced in the following paragraph, the risk of being threatened or even killed by the Lagos family. So it referenced a particular family at issue here. And we have no idea why the IJ thought that that was not deserving of any weight.
And that is correct. If the court does find that the IJ did not address this correctly, that is an ability for you to send it back for a determination, including that.
What about Mr. Rayfield's argument that the evidence is so strong in favor of his client, we should only send it back on acquiescence? What's your response to that?
I would state that we stand by the fact that, you know, it's still speculative based on the assumptions that are pieced together by the petitioner. We don't have evidence that even any of these people are even back over there, or if anybody has an interest in him. We would hold that that is not sufficient to support a finding that he met his burden of proof.
Well, we know someone has an interest in him based upon the mother and the neighbor who are in Honduras, right?
That is correct. But again, as the IJ found, they haven't linked that to the torture and the things that were in here, aside from he claimed that one was the Lagos family where was it the father that was stating that his son was attempted or his family member was killed?
It's the father of one of the individuals who was involved in the dispute with their client that is the center of this. So that's a pretty close relationship, isn't it?
But the Lagos person, I think, as the IJ noted, was one of the aggressors in this case and not the victim that the petitioner stabbed.
It was part of the same group, right? It's part of the same group.
They were an associate of one another, I believe, from the, yeah. So, but the government would still stand and say that that's not sufficient enough to support an overturning of the IJ's determination.
I seem to recall a case, recent case, that has similarities to this case. I'm thinking of Manning. Can you tell me what the relationship between our decision in Manning and this case is, if you are prepared to do so?
I think we looked at...
Sounded sort of similar to this.
I'm sorry, I'm like looking through my... Right. Okay. There's only one of me.
Well, that's all right. I don't want you to...
Yeah, I just like, yeah, I don't have... I don't
know. Manning was basically, there was no analysis of the expert report and we sent it back. I think we consistently do that as always to expert reports. Okay. Obviously, there is case law that says that the IJ doesn't have to mention every piece of evidence. We assume that they consider, you know, the materials that are before them, but we sort of draw the line when it's a key piece of evidence as an expert report is. So I think.
And should that court make the determination, then of course, like sending it back for reconsideration of that would be appropriate.
What's your argument? They had an argument in the briefs, an alternative argument, but it at least registered with me that even if you couldn't connect it directly to the group that Mr. Argueta had, you know, the dispute with in the United States, it's still, he still, it would be in danger from there, clearly based upon the affidavits looking for him to kill him in Honduras. So why does it matter whether it's the Lagos family because of what happened in the United States or some other reason that we don't know about? Isn't he still in the same level of danger? It doesn't have to be the same group, in other words, to put him in danger under CAT.
No, I mean, like, I guess it doesn't have to be the exact same people, but I mean, again, like the IJ was like unable to put like a sufficient basis there to find the torture.
Or no, the IJ would have, what I'm suggesting to you, in order for us to say that that wouldn't be enough on the CAT, the IJ would have to say, I don't believe the mother. I don't think it happened. Or I don't believe the neighbor. Then, you know, there would be an issue as to whether or not it had been proven. But if there's no doubting of the credibility of the mother and or the neighbor, then somebody is trying to kill him in Honduras, right?
Correct. And then like it would have to go back as far as like acquiescence and you'd have to make a determination on that as well.
All right. All right. If there are no further questions from my colleagues, we'll go to Mr. Rayfield in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to focus just a little bit on the scope of the remand, because there's a very big difference. There's a very important difference for my client between a remand solely for the IJ to consider the expert report and a remand that holds that the record compels a conclusion that he has satisfied the first prong of CAT. And I want to make clear that our position is that even if you didn't consider the expert report at all, the evidence compels the conclusion that he's likely to face torture. So there's no need for a limited remand solely to consider the expert report. And I think Judge Bianco's point from a couple minutes ago, even if the two sets of events, the violence against him in 2007 and the threats to his family in 2014, even if those events were entirely unconnected, that wouldn't change the fact that several different people have been told in no uncertain terms that Mr. Argueta will be killed if he returns to Honduras. I suppose it's possible that Mr. Argueta is also being targeted for reasons unrelated to his experience in the U.S., but there's no basis for that finding in the record. And if anything, it would make things more dangerous for him, not less.
We would be depriving the agency of the opportunity to assess and weigh the credibility of the mother and the neighbor. It seemed like the IJ, because the IJ thought there was no connection or insufficient connection, didn't opine on the credibility of that information or its reliability. So, and that's not something we do, right? Isn't that something potentially the IJ could open up the hearing again and say, okay, the Second Circuit has determined that if this is all true, there is a sufficient connection. So, you know, I need more testimony on this, or I need more. I don't know exactly what the scope of the hearing would be, but would allow them to reopen the hearing to focus more specifically on what the mother and the neighbor said.
I mean, I think the IJ did address the mother and the neighbor's testimony, the affidavits in his opinion, as did the BIA. The problem is that
he just said there was an insufficient connection, but I don't think he said I find them credible, but I believe this. I'm focused on the credibility issue or the weight issue. I think we sort of skipped, like the only thing that was said is like, there's not enough connection.
Well, he said that wasn't the only thing he said. He said that I'm not trying to bolster the IJ's analysis, but I think that he did consider the affidavits, and his main position was that he found that there were certain inconsistencies in the affidavits. He found that, Mr. Argueta's sister, he found that because she didn't mention Chicken Little's deportation to Honduras, that gave less weight to his claim. He found, for example, that because Dilgia Rivera said he reviewed Dilgia Rivera's affidavit and didn't think that there was enough of a connection to he was skeptical that the comment by Fidel Lagos was about Mr. Velasquez as opposed to someone else. So I think the IJ has had every opportunity to review this evidence, and it's, and given the length of detention and the state of the record now, I think I would respectfully request that the court make a firmer finding on the first prong of CAT that the IJ was going to be bound by.
And the other issue hasn't come up, the argument was in the briefing, is about the due process claim and the video conferencing of your client. I think if we were to remand, that would become moot as well, correct?
Yes. Okay. I think that's right.
All right. All right. Thank you very much to both sides. We'll reserve a decision. Thank you very much, and everybody have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With the thanks to Ms. Rodriguez, I'll ask her to adjourn court.
Court stands adjourned. Thank you, judges. I'll transfer you now.